Welcome to Voices in Value-Based Care. I'm Matt Fusen. Thanks for tuning in. The movement to value-based care is revolutionizing how healthcare providers get reimbursed for delivery of care. On this program, as you know, we explore stories from the field about how real organizations are dealing with this change. Also, as always, you can follow the show on Twitter at hashtag VoicesInVBC and follow SPH on Twitter at SPH Analytics. And I would love to hear from you on LinkedIn, so please reach out. On the program today, I'm talking with Esther Turner, Principal Product Manager, and Mike Foytik, Chief Analytics Officer, both from SPH Analytics. Both of them focus on the patient engagement side and experience side of our business. And with COVID having such a massive and kind of unprecedented disruption to how healthcare is delivered, we thought it would be great to talk to a couple of our experts and the data that they've seen from the field about how experience is being impacted and kind of some of the trends and where things might be going in the future. So thank you both for joining us today. Looking forward to the conversation. Esther, why don't we start with you? Why don't you give us a little bit of background about what brought you to this point in your career?
Hey, Matt. Thanks for having us today. It's good to talk with you and everybody today. So I've been with SPH Analytics for about the last decade, working really on understanding what health plans are looking for in terms of reporting and deliverables, software products that help support them in their quality improvement efforts, making sure that they are compliant with different regulations. So we work really closely gathering feedback from those clients. They have the data presented in a way that makes sense to them for their improvement efforts.
Excellent. Thank you. And Mike, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
All right. Thanks, Matt. Welcome, everybody else. So I've been in the health insurance, healthcare industry for 30 years, researching. I oversee all the data analytics, statistical analysis, reporting, processing. One of my former professors called me out about a year out of school and asked me to join his firm, and I've been here ever since. So I don't know anybody who actually goes out looking to become a market researcher. It's not like one of the career choices people think about, but once you get into the role, if you're a data junkie and really enjoy digging into problems like I do, then it becomes a great place to be. So glad to be here today.
Thank you both. Appreciate it. You know, we'll start by talking a little bit about how patient experience fits into the overall quality framework. So, of course, as we move toward more and more value-based care models, alternative payment models, the impact to both quality but patient experience tend to overlap. So, you know, it's also both from a health plan or payer perspective as well as for providers. Tell us more about how it fits in and kind of where you see an overlap.
Yeah, Matt. So that's exactly right. And we've really seen, especially in the last decade or so, since the Affordable Care Act really helped drive a lot of this, as CMS has shifted to measuring quality on a variety of different sectors in the healthcare, right? So it's both for health plans, for, you know, inpatient, outpatient services, for providers, for different, some of these other different aspects of care, be it dialysis centers, home health, hospice centers, they all have quality programs that have been instituted. And those quality programs cover such a wide range of measures. Some of them are our outcomes, there's process. But one thing that's really consistent across all those quality programs is the voice of the consumer, right? So the patient or member experience. And CMS and other organizations that measure quality, such as accreditation agencies, NCQA, URAC, they all have experience as a really important component of those quality frameworks. And the reason for that, I think, is it's spot on. You know, there are certain things when you're trying to understand quality for which the patient, the member, the consumer is really the only source of information for those different aspects. You can't find that from other data points. Can't understand if people are having trouble getting appointments with their doctor. You can kind of get at that from some other ways with network adequacy and things like that. But you won't really understand if there are issues with certain things like that, about care coordination, unless you're actually talking to members and understanding how they're feeling. And I think it's an important thing to remember too, that when we talk about the experience measures that are part of these quality programs, it's easy to talk about satisfaction. And I think what's important to remember is that these measures aren't measures of satisfaction per se, their experience. So they're not asking people to subjectively tell you how they felt about something. But what they're trying to do is get people to report on more of a kind of a frequency of something. How often did you have issues with access? How often were you able to get the care that you needed, right? And that's a very different thing than just talking about a more subjective, you know, whether or not you're satisfied with that, because satisfaction can vary. You know, people, what I think is a bar for what I would consider as good care would be very different from somebody else, right? So you've got
you've got to
really try to think objectively about what you're measuring. And that's what the surveys and the market research and the data that goes into these quality programs, it really tries to take the subjectivity out of it and make them as objective and reliable measures as we can.
And that's really interesting, because a lot of times when you're talking to different stakeholders, you know, not the member or patient, but different stakeholders, there's a lot of concern of, well, patient experience is subjective, right? And how can I control it? And I don't know if they were in a good mood that day or a bad mood. So the concept that you just brought about, I think, is really important for people to understand. It's not everything is done to try to remove the subjectivity, but it is stuff that you just can't learn through data, right? And we're trying to drive more and more of the healthcare system toward data for all obvious reasons, but we'll never be able to replace that voice of the consumer, as you said, with just pure data elements. It's interesting.
That's right. Well, and the way that the data is collected, it's done in a very rigorous and controlled way, right? So you're not just talking to people that are dissatisfied or that have had certain experiences, right? The methodology and the protocols for how we select people to participate in the surveys, they give their feedback, you know, it's all done in a very consistent and rigorous way to make sure that when we're looking at the data that comes out of that Michael talked about, that it is, we feel really confident. It's not biased and there aren't any, you know, issues with the quality of that.
Right. And that's been interesting for me as I've learned more and more about it as part of SPH, because it was an area I was aware of course, with quality and everything else, but didn't understand the methodologies behind it, right? And I think that's something that a lot of people don't necessarily know. And it's like, oh, some people just came up with a question to do a survey, right? It's much more scientific than that.
It is. And that's a really important point, Matt. It's important that people remember that these are the data and how it's collected. It's not random. And there's so much work and research and testing and checks of validity that go into these surveys. So the CAPS family of surveys, they come from AHRQ, Agency for Healthcare Quality and Research, and they are really kind of the gold standard in trying to understand member and patient experience, and they go through a very rigorous cycle of pilot testing, review, checks of, you know, question order, question bias. All of this is part of the program, and as part of that too, it's also, you know, making sure that the protocols are correct. We want to make sure we're talking to the right people. You know, this is making sure that everybody has a voice and an opportunity to be included in the survey. That's why most of these surveys are multi-mode. So some people prefer to do a survey by mail. Some do internet, some do telephone. So when we collect the data, the protocols are such that we try to make sure that we are really hitting a representative sample of people, so that the results that we have are statistically valid and reliable.
Excellent. And, you know, what is the value proposition of monitoring consumer satisfaction? And a term that has come back and forth in the healthcare world for many, many years now, consumer, right? And we use it here for a number of different reasons, but just to call that out for our listeners, right, that it is a patient, member, consumer, but at the end of the day, as the world moves forward with these different payment models, it really needs to be more of a consumer type mentality, right? Not just another widget. It's a consumer just like any other company would treat a consumer. So, you know, the value prop of that is it only financial or is there other components that go into it?
No, that's a good point. And I think it's huge. And we've really seen a shift towards more, you know, more consumerization, I guess that's the word, bad of healthcare over the last, you know, I've seen it really, you know, in the last 5 to 10 years, especially, we've seen this real shift towards organizations putting a concerted effort, focus, and C-level, you know, C-suite level attention on the experience. And I think organizations are realizing that, you know, when it comes to retention, renewal, you can't discount the consumer experience. So it's one thing that it's part of these quality programs and you have to report it. You know, health plans have to collect this data and report it. Different, you know, hospital and health systems have to collect this data. But it's also just good business, right? As you're competing with a hospital down the street, if there's word of mouth and there's experience, you know, people have come to expect excellent communication, you know, the ability to have data at their fingertips. And that's been a real shift, I think, in healthcare. And I think it's really important that, and we've seen it become a focus, you know, throughout these different organizations. And you've got, you know, organizations and institutes that are dedicated, you know, exclusively to patient experience and best practices. And I think that's been a really great trend in the industry. You know, the evidence shows that patient experience, you know, it's not just, like we were saying before, a satisfaction. It's associated with better outcomes, you know, better adherence to treatment, better clinical processes, better hospital patient safety for complications. You know, all of these things have been tied to better experience. And so there's the quality program framework that's important. There's a consumer choice and, you know, where they're going to take their, you know, what they're going to choose in terms of a health plan. You know, consumers have choice when it comes to Medicare Advantage during open enrollment. They can choose to pick different for elective procedures. They can choose different hospital systems and providers. So it helps inform consumer choice. And it also is really important in these quality frameworks.
And Mike, let's talk a little bit about now the disruption that COVID has created, right? And not just for healthcare providers, but also for the patients, members, consumers, right? It's across the board, which then raises some questions. Is this the appropriate time to be measuring patient experience, right? And are the results representative during the pandemic, or is it, hey, you know, we should just take this section and throw it out because what could we have done? Everything was totally random. You know, what's the data showing us? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, we certainly got those questions from our clients when the pandemic was declared in mid-March. Everybody was concerned. Many of the CAPS programs were either just fielding or only partway through the process. And everybody wanted to know, do we continue? This result's going to be any good? What are we seeing? They, you know, are people responding? Are they changing? You know, are they complaining? Are they acting like they don't have access? What we found, though, is that's actually very similar to 2019 at this time of year. We're getting very similar response rates, very similar satisfaction scores. If anything, scores are actually up a little bit over last year. We're finding access. You know, when we ask people, do you think, you know, we ask them, have you had any problems getting in for minor care, for major emergencies, just to see your personal doctor? People are reporting that they're having about as good of access as they did last year. Maybe a very, very small erosion, but nothing to be concerned about. And then if you ask people maybe a more forward-looking question outside of the CAPS program about like their confidence in being able to get care, people are very confident that if I needed care, I can still get it. I know they'll be available. I know they'll be open to me. So we're not really seeing any negative ramifications. In fact, for a little while when the pandemic first hit, our response rates were up. People were looking for something to do. They were answering the phone. We were getting more mail surveys back, although they were coming more sporadic. There's the postal systems had some challenges with you know, having to go face to face with a lot of households around the country, but ultimately, we're getting back those surveys and we're getting people on the phone. It's now kind of returned back more to normal in terms of people are back to not answering the phone if they don't recognize us. But but overall, very, very normal, despite the very abnormal circumstances.
And that was one of the things when we were preparing for this data, I was honestly surprised by, right? I think that the general assumption by many people would have been not the case, right? Which is good to hear. It means people are feeling confident that if they got to get care, they can get the care. And, you know, just as a nation, that's great to hear. And you also touched a little bit on it, but, you know, how have programs changed as a result, you know, from CMS or NCQA? Has there been some relaxation from some of these program requirements? What's that look like?
There's been, and Esther can add to this, but there's been a lot of step back in terms of not requiring these official mandated surveys this year. Most of the programs, home health, hospice, in-center hemodialysis, the commercial CAHPS programs have all stepped back and said, we're not gonna do necessarily official measurement this year of satisfaction. We're gonna go back to last year's scores and move those forward. We'll do the clinical measures, but we won't do the satisfaction scores because they were concerned about the impact. And we tried to work with some of those agencies to say, you know, you might want to reconsider that. But many of them made that decision very early in the process and did not want to back off of it. It maybe is a little easier. So now really it's, we still encourage our clients to go out there and find out about your customers. Even if it's not official, you don't want to be 2 years down the road before you're capturing what people were saying about you, because it snowballs essentially over time. You want to be on top of it. This is the best way to do it. And if you have some problems, whether it's local to your plan, local to your provider group or whatever, knowing it now is better than learning it 6 months or a year from now.
Yeah, I would agree with that, Mike. And, you know, we saw early a lot of the regulatory agencies step back, and, you know, things were so chaotic in March, and we were all kind of, everyone was trying to feel their way and make appropriate choices. And the thought back then was, goodness, we don't want to burden provider offices and, you know, different aspects of healthcare delivery with some of these, you know, collecting metrics on these quality measures. You know, it's more important that the, you know, patients and frontline providers, you know, have what they need and can focus on the pandemic. Well, what we've realized is that, yeah, to Mike's point, we really didn't see a difference in response from the, you know, the health plan CAP surveys that are, you know, measuring experience that members have with their health plan. So those programs did, some of them still collected data, but those data points won't be used in the quality reporting that comes out this year. As Mike said, they're either deferring to next year or they're just removing those pieces. But I think it's really critical, and we've counseled health plans this over and over again, is you don't want to fly data blind, especially in times of change and in times that are anomalous. These are the times when you want to have data and you want to be able to understand it. You don't want to look back in a couple months and want to understand what happened during this time and have a black hole of information, right? So it's really important during times of crisis that the voice of the member, the voice of the patient is front and center. I mean, I can't stress enough how important it is. You know, we wouldn't know without looking at the data what kind of trends we're seeing, you know, if there's systems in crisis, if there are different aspects that, you know, people are struggling with. Unless you have the data to show that, you know, you're flying blind, and that's never a place an organization wants to be.
Right. And as you were talking, I was just thinking, you know, well, okay, so I don't have to do this regulatory wise, but wow, I really want to know how we did during this unprecedented time, right? It's almost more critical than ever from a business perspective to have this data know. And as you said, as we all know, the retros will happen, right? And 6 months after it all started, it'll be like, all right, let's look back. How did we do to prepare for the next one? Oh no, we got a gap in data because we decided to stop doing this because regulatory said we didn't have to do it, right? So would likely be pretty short-sighted. What do you see moving forward for patient experience in more weight or less weight and value-based care type of reimbursement models? So for instance, in the MIPS MACRA program, starting at least supposed to be in 2021, is something called MIPS Value Pathways or MVPs. And they have already said, CMS, that there's going to be more emphasis in that the on-patient experience than there has been in typical MIPS. So in typical MIPS, you could choose to include CAHPS as a quality measure, but it was a choice, and outside of that, there was nothing. So for sure, CMS is going to ramp it up in the MIPS program. You know, what else do you think we can expect?
Yeah, so regulations have been flying hard and fast at us in this last couple of months, right? Some are related to the pandemic and some are not. And one of the things that, you know, has happened in the midst of the pandemic, so if you think about the different quality programs, you know, one of the big ones in terms of financial incentives is the Medicare Advantage Star Rating Program, right?
Mm-hmm.
Medicare Advantage plans that contract with the federal government to provide Medicare services, right? They are scored and rated on a 1 to 5 star rating system, the star ratings. And, you know, and higher is better. So 5 stars are the highest performing plans. And depending on how you score on those, on that program, you will receive potentially quality bonus payments from CMS. And it also, there's a consumer choice piece of that too. So when you go to select a Medicare Advantage plan and you're on Medicare.gov, you see these quality ratings as you're going to make a choice on plans. So pre-pandemic, CMS had already started proposing that they were going to increase the weights of the experience measures that feed into that program. In the last couple of weeks, CMS decided to go ahead and increase the weight of experience and kind of member complaints and those sort of kind of very member-centric measures as a percentage of the kind of overall program. And that's pretty huge and it's pretty significant. You know, CMS has been moving that way. The weights on those measures started off as a 1.5. They've moved to a 2, and now CMS has doubled those to a 4. You know, so CMS is really kind of doubling down on the importance of experience. They think it's such an important indicator of quality, and they're making those measures even more important in the overall program. I think, too, it's, you know, most plans relative to other measures do fairly well on CAHPS. So, you know, most plans, you know, aren't going to see a huge decline because they've been focusing on these. But, you know, it's important that plans continue to focus on this and other aspects of care too. I mean, Medicare Advantage is just one example of how important it is. But as we know, experience is kind of a bellwether for other quality measures and
right.
outcomes of that.
CMS clearly believes in patient experience and, as a relationship with quality. Almost every provider program has got at least some component going with patient care, patient experience being a component for compensation, all the value-based care designs, the patient-centered care is, you know, designed around the idea that the patient is the key and getting them involved. You can't have full quality care if the patient's not engaged and compliant with what the first provider is even prescribing. So I think having some way of measuring that, capturing it, and compensate those who do that partnership well is going to be a bigger part of anything going forward. So.
Absolutely. And as frequent listeners hear me say almost every podcast, I always wish we had more time. So we got a couple minutes left, Mike, and I wanted to touch on telehealth. Of course, it's exploded with COVID. You know, lots of models out there that it's not going to stay at the peak, but it's definitely not putting that genie back in the bottle, right? You know, what have we seen around telehealth, how it's impacted patient experience, et cetera? Kind of give us your thoughts on that. That would be great.
Certainly. So we had a survey going live right before the pandemic hit and then carried it on shortly afterwards. We were showing like 11% or so of the people said that they had had a visit prior to the pandemic. It bumped slightly right after the pandemic was declared. But then when we follow up back in May, at the end of May, early June, we're seeing almost a third of people are saying that they've had some type of telehealth visit. And if we ask interest level, the interest level had followed even higher levels of interest, at least in it, at least more people were aware, more willing to consider. But as the pandemic now is maybe starting to slow down in some areas and people are getting back to work, back in public, it's starting to come back down not back fully to the pre-pandemic levels, but back a little more, say more reasonable. People maybe thinking it through, even if they hadn't had the experience. Well, you know, I still want to visit with my doctor, and a lot of times telehealth is with some unknown doctor that not sure what to, that, you know, don't have a relationship with. So, but even interestingly, we've seen the two growth areas in terms of people who had had a telehealth visit was on either extreme of the age group. It was the very youngest people and the very oldest people were the middle age categories that had already been kind of utilizing a little more than usual, probably, you know, parents with children, working households and so on. But the very youngest people who didn't have a doctor relationship and the very oldest people who maybe liked that person-to-person doctor relationship were starting to explore telehealth more and seem to have had a positive experience, those who have tried it.
And it's really interesting, right? With anything that explodes so quickly, you're going to have many models, right, and many different types of experience. So I've just been personally talking to, and I've had a couple myself, and asking. And one thing that's clear is the experience is vastly different between organizations, right? And between, like you said, a third party that has a bunch of doctors available that aren't yours that you can call in that built their whole business model on that versus your doctor who's built their whole business model on face-to-face, and now we're going to scramble and it's a Zoom meeting or something. Feels to me this is going to be an area for a lot of patient experience development in the future. So we'll keep our eyes on that and probably try to bring some of that data back as we learn over the years of what's going on. So again, unfortunately, we are out of time. I always wish we had much longer than we do. Thank you so much for the data, the insights, and your thoughts. Really appreciate it and enjoyed the conversation today. For all of us, all the listeners out there, of course, you can learn more about the show on the program's page on healthcarenowradio.com and lend your voice to the conversation on Twitter at hashtag VoicesInVBC. And be sure to follow SPH on Twitter at SPH Analytics. I'm Matt Fusen, bringing you the voices in value-based care you should hear. Until next time, have a great week.